while they're fiddling around here, we'll get started. This has been an interesting room last couple of days. Representative Eakin can attest there was no overhead and no microphones last night. And now this morning we thought they were all working, but as you can see, this is the most bizarre thing I've seen. We're putting the computer on the overhead, actually. So we haven't graduated to whiteboards or anything high-tech in this place yet, so we're working on it. So. Members, I'm going to call the meeting of the Agro Economies Veterans Affairs Finance Committee to order, and Representative Shemansky moves the minutes of February 17th. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, minutes are adopted. What we're going to do today, first of all, I don't have my coat because I left it at home on my chair when I was eating breakfast this morning. You know how you do that? You put on your overcoat, and for some reason, I don't know. So, like AJ said, I don't think I have to be on the Senate floor today, so I'm probably okay. So, we're going to start. I appreciate, again, I'm going to tell the committee, I appreciate your time yesterday. It was kind of a confusing day for all of us, but you know, you are all test pilots here this year, and you know, for staff and department people, to be fair, I mean, this is kind of a new way of looking at budgets, and we're trying to figure it out. I think the Department of Veterans Affairs next week and the weeks following will try and get everything on one sheet, so we're not paging through four or five different sheets. I think you'll see with Department of Agriculture, to their credit, it's going to be a little easier today to follow. So. The other thing is, today we're going to start with the pesticide division, and I was thinking this through. I think it's going to be easier as we go through these divisions. If there's people in the audience that want to testify, and we do have one person today already that would like to testify on pieces of this, we will allow for testimony because I think it coalesces it better rather than waiting for a month and a half and then have someone come and testify about something they heard, you know, 6 weeks earlier. I think it's better that folks weigh in. If you have a concern or an idea for the budget that's being presented that day, feel free to give us your name and we will get you up to testify as we go forward. So, with that, we'll start. What we're going to do is we'll see how it goes. I've talked to the department. We basically want to do an overview of the division, which will take 5, 10, whatever minutes. And again, we can ask questions as we go. Then I want them to actually go to our budget books. We're going to try and do this a little more orderly today with them. Go to our budget books and let's go over the overview on that division. Let them walk through the narrative they've put in place. Then transition to the budget items, the one-page budget sheet, as well as change items. But as we go through, Mr. Bozicki, your various accounts within your division, that's when we want to refer right at that time to the spreadsheets and actually talk about who works there, how many FTEs, and then we can ask questions on anomalies or other things we see in the spreadsheets at those times, which I know you're surrounded by capable people on budget up there the whole time too. So I will allow you to introduce yourselves and proceed any way you feel. Wait a minute. Huh? Oh, yeah. We've got Red River Valley Emerging Leaders hanging out today. They're the blue shirts you see there. So we see the blue jackets once in a while. You know, that's the FFA folks. The blue shirts are the Emerging Leaders. Good program. These folks are from the Red River Valley area. So, and for you, we're going through ag pesticide budgets today. So it'll probably be more excitement than you've seen in a long time here. So, all right. However you want to go, three of you there. Whoever wants to start, introduce, and proceed.
Well, Mr. Chair, for the record, my name is Greg Bozicki. I'm the Division Director of the Pesticide and Fertilizer Management Division. And I'd like to thank you and the committee for this opportunity to present an overview and then go over some of the details. And Mr. Chair, with your permission, what I'd like to do, and I assembled about seven slides that will provide a bit of an overview of the division, and then actually, because of the change levels that we'll be talking about later, deal with pesticides. We actually drill down and talk about some of the pesticide issues in particular, because I know the committee is interested in that. So I've got some glare coming off the screen, so I'm going to try to read it off the distance and guide you through. But again, for the committee's benefit, the department has a number of regulatory responsibilities, and one of those regulatory responsibilities is to deal with the regulation of pesticides and fertilizers. That's housed in our division. Very briefly, pesticides are regulated at the federal level by EPA, and then through a contract agreement and a delegation of authority, we regulate everything there is on pesticides in the state of Minnesota. If it deals with pesticides, it's in our court. There's a couple of exceptions, and we're talking about those a little bit, but as we go through the presentation, but the main message here is that we deal with pesticide issues. And as, of course, the A committee is familiar with, those necessarily mean controversy and a lot of science. So we'll be getting into that a little bit. In addition, we regulate fertilizers. Unlike pesticides, fertilizers are not regulated at the federal level. They're regulated only at the state level, with some exceptions, but largely it's a state law. And the biggest controlling statutory change and statutory oversight that impacts pesticides and fertilizers is the 1989 Groundwater Protection Act, in which all of pesticide and fertilizer law in the state was rewritten, revised, and the pesticides and fertilizers being separate statutes, written previously as separate entities, were combined for some aspects and called agricultural chemicals. Now, I know a lot of you are comfortable with agricultural chemicals being pesticides or pesticides, which could include herbicides and fungicides, but for the purpose of the statute, in some regards, we call them agricultural chemicals combined both. So with that brief introduction, and Mr. Chair and committee members, if there are questions, I'd be happy to handle them, or we have staff here that can attempt to answer them at all, and if we can't answer them satisfactorily, we'd be happy to get back to you during the course of after the presentation. Okay, now I can see this on the screen. I'm not sure if you can see this, but this is the four regulatory divisions in the department. It's a lot of detail. You don't need to look at it all that much. The important message here is that our division is located in the lower right-hand corner, and we have three funds listed there: general, dedicated, and federal. Most important thing for you to know is that most of our funding comes from dedicated accounts. These are pesticides and fertilizer fees. We have a little bit of general fund. Actually, what's listed there largely is some of the money that was provided to the department for the Clean Water Act, Clean Water Legacy funding. And as you can see, we have a little bit of federal money that comes to us as well. So most of it's dedicated. Now, this is a list. It's not a complete list, and it's certainly not an exhaustive list, but it's a list that I formulated just to give the committee an idea of some of the issues that we commonly deal with. I organized it into three components: current activities, these are routine and that we actually have quite a bit of activity going on, emerging issues, and current activities that involve both pesticides and fertilizers. One of the things that you should be aware of is that all of these activities are activities that we are authorized to do in statute, and we get a lot of interest from citizens, from other agencies, both state and federal. We coordinate very well with our sister agencies on a number of various issues, and they are constantly seeking our input because we are the pesticide regulatory agency. Pesticides are complex. We register about 13,000 products, and somewhere around 1,000 active ingredients, and they all have their own characteristics. So what I wanted to do
is... When you say you register 13,000 products, but you don't label 13, can you explain where the law comes, the labeling, and what are you doing with registration above and beyond that?
Surely, Mr. Chair, good question. In order to register a pesticide at a state level, it first must be registered at the federal level. In order to do that, a large series of tests and legal requirements must be met. It costs, for most active ingredients, which is actually what the active ingredient is, what the test is performed on, tests are performed on, and does the activity in the environment, whether it's weeds or fungus or so forth. Anyway, there has to be a tremendous amount of testing that is done, and out of that testing comes a prescribed label. I don't have one with me, but a label actually is a document 40, 100 pages long that contains specific use directions, qualifications on how to use the product and what it can be legally used for and what it cannot be used for and how to use the product. The label is the law. That's a legal document, and we enforce that. So that's one of the things we're constantly talking to users. The label is the law. People must follow and abide by all of those directions. If not, they're in violation of the state and federal law. What happens is the pesticide goes through these tests. It may take a number of years. It will cost millions of dollars to get that label approved, to go through the test, and to get the label in just the right way. And then once it's labeled at the federal level, it is then we are then allowed to label it or to register it at the state level, but only if a company wants to label it. What they'll do is they'll apply for registration. Only if they want to register. They'll apply for registration, and we'll review that application, collect a fee, and that product will be registered. Now, we have authority in our statute, 18B, to do a more examination or to put on our state use restrictions. The legislative audit, which was conducted in 2005-2006, suggested that we do more. Very few states do a lot more than what is happens at the federal level, about four or five of them. The legislative auditor recommended that we take a special registration review, and we are undergoing that process right now. We published a scoping document on how we want to proceed, and that was published last September, I believe, and we're currently looking at atrazine as our first product that we're going to go through and provide special registration review. All other products are registered in the state, we generally collect the fee, and therefore they have state registration. Nationally, there's about 40,000 products, and again, in this state, there's about 13,000 that we register.
And those are annual registrations?
Mr. Chair, that's correct. Those are annual registrations. And we'll be getting into the fee collection a little bit later. But Mr. Chair, that's a good example of one of the issues that I've listed as emerging issues, for example, is special registrations. Currently, we're spending about a full-time equivalent on that, and it's a pretty complex process, and we work very closely with Pollution Control Agency, the Department of Health, and on certain issues we'll be working with the Department of Natural Resources. It's a very transparent process, takes a lot of time. So that one little item there is basically one full-time equivalent. I would just point out another information piece. The way we do business right now in some ways is similar to the way we've done in the past, but actually, if you look at how we go about doing our regulatory work and our outreach work, it's not unlike society as a whole. We've changed a lot. There's a lot of things that we don't do like we used to do a few years ago, and there's a lot of things that we're doing now that we hadn't dreamed of a few years ago, or the situation's got a lot more complex. One of the items that I put down is data requests and data management. Last, by any of my testified about compliance inspection systems that I know that the committee has heard a little bit about. I'm pleased to say that's in the field and working, but that costs significant dollars to get underway. But now we have a paperless one-entry system for all of our inspections that we do in the field, and that is searchable, and instead of having paper files that take a lot of staff time to go through, we now can pull up the case files electronically. Coupled with that, we have data requests. We've always had data requests, and we've certainly complied with the Data Practices Act, but nowadays some of these data requests coming in are very extensive, and they go back a long way. We recently had one that where we spent over a full-time equivalent and a half to meet those data requests. That data request information, we're seeing several more of these. So what we're doing in the division is putting in everyone's position description of 5% components to make sure that all data is managed properly. And members, 5% component in a position description for 70 staff members means 3 full-time equivalents. So we'll be spending a lot of time making sure that all of our data, all of our information is being managed properly so that we can retrieve it efficiently and that we're not holding on to data that is something that we should not be holding on to.
And remember, to that point, not only this department, but other departments, I think it's something I've started talking to Representative Mulry about. In data, when someone comes in for a data request, a public data request, what they can do right now literally is go on what I call fishing expeditions, you know. Come in and say, okay, I want every memo and every note and every piece of paper in the department that, you know, has the word Monsanto on it. And, you know, it doesn't specify a time frame, you know, this year or this month or whatever, so they can narrow their search. And or it could be even worse than Monsanto. I could say pesticide. Give me all the data. Every document says pesticide. And that's why now you're seeing 3.5-4 people full-time having to work on data requests. And you're seeing that in other departments, too. So the question is there something we can do with our state data laws to allow people? We want people to be able to access public data. I don't think that's the question with anyone. But should we allow broadband, you know, fishing expeditions in our department, or should they narrow their requests? I'm looking for pesticide memos from, you know, January through June of 2006 that might have come, you know, you can narrow these requests down. A lot of times people make requests and they really don't even hardly pick up the information once it's done or anything like that. Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Is there a cost to people when they request a large data base?
When people come in to remake a data request, I want every document on atrazine over the last 10 years.
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, there is a cost. The Department of Administration has essentially rules, guidance that, and policy, I should say, that helps define what those costs are, and there's been court cases. I'm not an expert in that area, but I do know that we can recover certain costs for certain aspects of the recovery of the data. But oftentimes, it's only a portion of actually what it costs us to pull the information together. We could provide further information to the committee on what our policy is. I know different agencies have different policies, but basically, it is a fraction of what it costs to assemble all of this. As I said, for a good example is we're going to put into our, the way that we want to make sure that our staff are following this, is they've always had general direction, but we're going to put in a 5% component in each of their position descriptions. So that means they'll be spending 5% of their time on a regular basis maintaining all of their data, all of their emails, all of their hard copy, and so forth. Now, granted, that's a good thing for everyone to do, but I think you can appreciate that if people get busy and they don't always do it. Some are better at it than others. Well, 5%, if you multiply that out, of 70 positions amounts to 3.5 full-time equivalents. So that decision, which we don't take lightly at all, we want people to do, to carry that out, is going to cost us 3.5 full-time equivalents spread out over everyone just to maintain that so we can do a good job in the future. That's no cost that we can charge to anyone. That's just part of doing business in this day and age. Mr. Chair, I will continue to drill this down a little bit. I know in going over the documents, the budget documents, there's a lot of numbers and a lot of information. What I've chosen to do is actually go back and look at some 08, 09 data just to give the committee an overview of our division. And what I'd like to do is these are our principal funding resources that we get, and in some large numbers, these are millions of dollars, or dollars and thousands. So at the top of this general fund, we get about in this time period, we had about $2.2 million. I believe the majority of this, other than about $800,000, was the Clean Water Act money that the legislature had appropriated to the department, and that was used for research. During that period. So those are passed through dollars. Fertilizer tonnage is actually fees that we collect and we use for our fertilizer regulatory program. Pesticide regulatory account, that is the 0.4% of the annual gross sales is the fee that we charge on that. 0.4% of any pesticide sold in the state of Minnesota for use in the state of Minnesota, I have to pay 0.4% of the annual gross sales to the department. That's paid for by the registrar. There's a $250 minimum on that payment. That accounts for $5.6 million. The ACRA account is a 0.3%, same scenario on pesticides. It also has some fertilizer dollars that go into that and license dollars, of course. And that is used largely as a dedicated account to fund cleanup that involves agricultural chemicals. So most of that money is passed through to people involved in cleanup. The remediation fund 2.7 is funds that are used to pay for Superfund sites. And a small amount of that, $388,000, is used for staff that we have. And finally, the federal money, the $786,000 during this time period, is what we get from our EPA partners. About half of that money goes to the laboratory. So, Mr. Chair, we have $14 million in our budget, but as you can see, with ACRA and remediation and with the general fund that's used for the Clean Water Legacy Act in this period, a significant portion of that has actually passed through, so our division budget is significantly smaller than this. Now, we have a fee proposal, and I know a number of members have heard a little bit about this, but what I thought I would do is, rather than go back with all the numbers, is show you what we're looking at in the fund statement, in our fund statement, without the fee increase. The yellow line shows this is just for the pesticide regulatory account. The yellow line shows the gradual increase that we've documented. It's a little bit dark there, but up through 2008, there's been a gradual increase in that fund. But without a fee increase, that funding will continue that trajectory and a relatively flat line. We have expenditures that have been tracking along that line, but they have increased above the revenue, as you can see. The big jump in FY 09 would be largely attributed to... Is that even showing up?
No.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Okay.
I knew if I could do this. Let's see if I can trace this. Okay. So this is the expenditure route along here. And then at this point, there's a significant jump. This is largely due to what we budgeted for the waste pesticide. This is budgeted and not spent, but this is what we have budgeted for the waste pesticide collection. And then what we're projecting here is that actually we would suspend the waste pesticide collection as it goes in the out years. And the reason for that is the lower line, which actually shows our reserve. Our reserve was in the neighborhood of about $4 million a few years ago, and we've been spending that down. But with the increase in the waste pesticide program, what we would be looking at is a reduction in the reserve to a level that's in statute that would allow us or direct us to stop the waste pesticide program. And then, as you can see, we would be in the red. So our concern is, how do we keep maintaining these programs with the increased cost of doing our program and the direction that we've received from the legislature? We would either have to cut services, or we would have to have new revenue. So we have proposed a fee increase that we'll be getting passed shortly. One of the things I've mentioned is increased cost, and I've showed you a list of some of the things that we do. These are services that people request, and they seek our advice. They seek our input and our knowledge. It's very important, I think, for agriculture that we are there as the pesticide regulatory agency to provide that. But it does cost money. And what I've assembled here, with the exception, excluding the waste pesticide collection program that I mentioned before, is just three program areas or three issues that I have to deal with as a manager, and the costs and how they've increased. And the first one is rent. Take 2 points, FY97 and FY2007. And just something that I have to deal with in the real world is, in 10 years ago, our rent was $101,000. Now it's $412,000, or it was in FY07. That's a $300,000 increase to my division, it's an increased cost that we have to pay for.
And to that point, obviously you're in a new building now, and that's part of the difference. It'll be interesting to see the cost per square foot difference there. And are you billed per employee or per physical area you take up in the building?
Mr. Chair, we're billed per square foot.
Okay. Be interesting to understand. The numbers are nice, but if we could get the cost per square foot you're paying. How many square feet did you have in the old building on Plato, and how many square feet do you have now, and then what does that translate into the cost per square foot rent?
Mr. Chair, I don't have that at my fingertips, but we can get that for you very easily.
Our folks, just to remind folks, that Ag Building was built by the St. Paul Port Authority with their bonding authority a few years ago, and now we're paying rent with an option to own it at the end of the bonding period, over 20 years or whatever it is. And so it'll be interesting to see what it costs us to do that. And Mr. Reinhold.
Mr. Chairman, members, I believe House Research does have that information. It was supplied to us last year by the department in a letter that was dated April 13, 2008 to the chair. If you would like to know the square footage cost,
I'm sure I received it.
Rent at Plato Boulevard, according to the department in this letter, the rent at Plato was $19 a square foot. At the rent at the Freeman Building was at least at the time this was prepared, $35 a square foot.
So Mr. Ernst, do you know if that's still the case? Has any of those terms changed over the last year or two at the Freeman Building?
Mr. Chairman, Steve Ernest, Financial Management Director at the Department of Agriculture. Mr. Chairman, the rent for the Freeman Building has, I think, gone down by about $1 a square foot. For the upcoming biennium that we're planning for, will go down, but the lab building went up considerably, and I don't have those numbers at my right here, but that's a higher cost building to run.
Mr. Ernst, what would cause the fluctuation? I mean, are we dollar less a square foot? Are we shutting more lights off? Are we not cleaning as often? I mean, I assume you're in a landlord kind of situation with the building, and you said it's higher cost now to run, or are we just now starting to realize those costs and adjusting as necessary as we go forward?
Mr. Chairman, the Department of Administration is who we pay the rent to, and they do an analysis each year of what services they need to operate each building. they are trying to do things like turn off lights and you know, not do extra things that they can get away with not doing. We have to leave some lights on at night. But the lab building has a lot more costs, machinery that has to stay on overnight, some things like that, air filtering systems, pressurization systems. So those costs are calculated by the Department of Admin and approved by the Department of Finance and then billed to us.
Representative Wells.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to the testifiers, I'm just wondering, I've been on tours of the Ag building, and I noticed that when we went through, of course, you have moved into quite a bit of space that isn't being fully utilized, and I know you're possibly planning for future growth, but until that future growth and with the current state deficit that we're facing, are you considering at the Department of Agriculture any way to consolidate into using less space so that frees up some space and possibly getting out of some of the contractor lease and turning it over to some non-governmental entity to rent or other governmental entities to utilize so that we don't incur all that cost?
Good question. I noticed the same thing when we were walking around. It seemed to me that if you consolidated the empty space, you'd have a half a floor or three quarters of a floor open almost, because there was space seemed on multiple floors that were empty.
Yeah.
So how are we built for that empty space too, I guess would be the first question. How has that worked out? You said you're literally built for your square footage, but if you're not sitting there and using the square footage, are you built for that empty space?
Mr. Chairman, first of all, more than half of our empty square foot space was caused by the Federal Department of or Federal Ag Statistics Office not moving into our building. We had planned for some space for them, and then actually when they saw the rent rate, the federal government said that was a little too expensive for them, and so they found cheaper space downtown. We have tried to move some divisions around, especially when we consolidated the Ag Finance RSA division into the Ag Development division. We have received some supplemental rent appropriations so that a division like pesticide and fertilizer doesn't have to pay for a large block of space that they're not using. There might be the odd, you know, two or three workspaces that they don't have staff occupying at the moment. So we kind of separate some of that as an agency level cost. And then the Department of Administration is aware exactly of what square foot on what floors we have. And we've been talking to them about looking for other tenants to move into that space or possibly reconfigure some space. I guess we haven't pursued the reconfiguring too much, but they are aware and they are to some degree, I can't say what they're doing, looking for or aware of if someone is a small board or something is looking for some space. I think they had a few people ask about it and look at the space and then it didn't quite fit their needs. So
clearly you're paying for the empty space.
We are.
And would your cost per square foot then go down if that space was filled with someone else?
No, Mr. Chairman, per square foot it wouldn't go down, just the total bill would go down.
But your total bill would go
yes.
down.
Yes.
Okay.
And there is about a dollar per square foot of our rent that goes into a building repair and replacement account for any needs that the building has to have. It's maybe a part of our cost that wouldn't exist in the private sector. I'm not sure.
It exists. Usually have a 5%
yeah.
set aside for maintenance and repair, typically. So there's usually a management cost. In the private sector, they'll pay a management cost and a repair maintenance cost, and all that is set aside, too, if you're a good landlord in doing that. But that is a lot of money per square foot, I guess, you know, projecting out what happens once the bonds are paid back, and obviously that's many years down the road, what happens to our rent then once we own the building. And anyway, it's water over them. I won't bring up the case that we wanted to move that building to outstate Minnesota. We won't even talk about that today when it happened, but there's just more case in point of what happens when we add to the complex down here. Proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And again, I'm
trying to inform the committee that there are some costs that are beyond our control. Perhaps not beyond your control, but beyond our control. The next one that I would point to is an indirect charge cost. This is basically a state or federal or state agency overhead to support services that we all use, such as HR, for example. And 10 years ago, our costs were $478,000 when you add it all together, and now they're $626,000. So that's an increase of roughly $150,000. We looked at the average cost of the staff in these 2 years, and this is a salary and fringe cost, benefits and so forth. But in 97, it was a little over $47,000. Now, through cost of living adjustments and increases that are part of the union contracts and so forth, it's now about $74,000 for an average employee. And as I've informed some folks, in my situation, Mr. Chair, they don't get anybody who's any better, maybe just a little older and a little slower moving. That's about it. So,
backing up a minute, again, I know this is nitpicking, but just for my edification, what is in an overhead cost that isn't in a rent cost? So if rent's encompassing heat and lights and the square foot rentage and everything else, emptying your trash and all that, the rent charge, what additional are you paying then for overhead? Overhead for what?
Mr. Chair, I can take a shot at that. My interpretation, maybe Steve would like to...
Is it support staff like Ms. Cheney sitting there, or is it, do you have pieces of overhead to pay for department-wide for Mr. Ernst and Ms. Cheney, who are overseers of the entire agency? Is that what the overhead is, and what would be some other things that you're charged back?
Mr. Chair, yes, that would be correct. HR, our HR division provides support for us on obviously a variety of issues. As far as state services, I mentioned earlier, and Mr. Earth did as well, the Department of Administration. I would assume some of our funds go to support some of those, that support that they provide to us in negotiating around store, overseeing the fleet management and so forth. I think that's basically the human service aspect of what we do. Continuing on, Mr. Chair, in both of these years, in FY97 and 2007, the pesticide regulatory...
Sorry, move on. Representative Tremba has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Out of the fees, how much of that is coming out of general operating, if any?
Madam Chair, Representative Tremba, is your question how much of this is general fund or...
That comes out of our fees. The fees that we're proposing, are some of those dollars going for general, or is it always just to fertilizer or whatever?
I think we're going to get into that in a little bit, the breakdown, but if you have a general answer, how much is fees driven in your versus how much general fund?
Mr. Chair, Representative Otremba, the fees that we collect, other than what is paid for an indirect cost, which I've given some indications here, those are dedicated to the program. So a pesticide dollar that's paid is paid for a pesticide activity.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. And not to belabor a point, but just to comment on the rent again, when you said it seemed too expensive, or the USDA thought it was too expensive, that's kind of scary. I mean, they can print money, and if they think it's too expensive, who establishes the rent at the building?
Mr. Ernst?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, the Department of Administration establishes the rent. And like I said, it's approved by the Department of Finance. I would say some of the factors maybe that make it more expensive than a building downtown would be the fact that the building is on the Capitol complex. It has higher standards under the law of just the way things have to be maintained. It's the way things have to look. To the standards of the Capitol complex, you know, we have
maybe it'd be helpful, Mr. Reinholz, if you could work on seeing with your colleague in the fiscal staff, you could just get a sheet on the breakout of how they did calculate that from admin. They've got to have it for every building. The cost, they must have a way to figure that. Should be available for every building in this complex, and from our parking ramp out here that they charge us for and must base it on something to the Freeman building.
Mr. Chairman, I certainly can get that. I've seen that information. Right. That rent in state buildings is an item that is closely watched over by state government committee.
If you could get us a sheet on our building here, it'd be helpful. We'll get that to members in subsequent meetings.
Okay. And Mr. Chair, again, just to continue, I'll finish this up quickly here. I wanted to bring to the committee's attention some of the increased costs that we have to our pesticide activities that are beyond our control. The salary cost, for example, with 47 employees, which are charged to this account overall, that's the line of the total cost. In 97, we paid a little over $2.2 million for those 47 employees. Obviously, it's increased to almost $3.5 million. So when you add all of that up, just over that 10-year period, just looking at these three issues, our program has incurred $1.7 million of additional costs that were beyond our control. And just in summary then, the costs have gone up. The workload, the attention to pesticide issues certainly has increased. I think this committee is well aware of that over the last few years. There's a lot of multi-agency activity that's increasing. CMDL work, all the environmental work, and so forth. And that sooner or later will bring in pesticides. And we anticipate this increased workload to continue. Mr. Chair, I do have some handouts on the changes. I know you want to get into some of the specifics.
Before we move on, Representative Faust has a question or comment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Maybe this is what you're going to be getting into. I'm looking at page 31 of our book here. And on the bottom, I see that in 2009, we had 70.9 full-time equivalents, and with a total budget of $10,700,000. In 2009, we had 50.1 full-time equivalents, $14.8 million total budget. 2010, 50 full-time equivalents with a budget of $18 million. Can you explain, obviously, with the reduction in the number of employees, it isn't because our employees are costing us more, so can you give me an idea of where that increased money is going to?
So if you have a general answer, or if you're going to walk us through that, that's what we want to find out here. That is an anomaly on the budget sheet, no question about it.
Mr. Chair and Representative Faust, you're looking at the full-time equivalent on FY 08, 09, 10, and 11?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. To be honest, Mr. Chair and Representative Faust, and I strive to be, the 70.9, I'm not sure as of that account. I'm not sure exactly these numbers. What these numbers appear to me, the 70.9 for the entire division, if I believe that is to be correct in 2008. And the 50, I believe, is a number that is, while the totals go up, the numbers, the full-time equivalents go down. That is not a division number. I'm not sure how that was calculated.
Well, maybe Mr. Ernst can work on that as we proceed through this. And that's a good question. That doesn't seem to reflect above either, you know, on the total dollars. I'm trying to see it line by line, but I don't see it. But we'll be getting into some of these divisions. Maybe we'll see it jump out there.
And Mr. Chair and Representative House, I did look at that prior to this presentation. If you actually look at some of the other divisions, you see the same kind of drop down in subsequent years. I'm not quite sure, and I have to admit I forgot to coordinate my
question with Mr. Ernst beforehand, so we probably want them to ask.
We'll figure it out.
Okay, Mr. Chair, if we could hand out these fact sheets, and I will, these are fact sheets that are found in King's level items. The first one that's going to be handed out is one that deals with ACRAs. Actually, your budget book is page 19 of the King's level. And all of these do address the pesticide regulatory cost issues. Perhaps the simplest one is this one. The ACRA program is a program that collects generally about $2.5 million, and that money in statute is dedicated to reimbursement of cleanup. 80% of $350,000 per cleanup. Now, these cleanups can be sudden releases, or they could be long-time contamination that has been discovered.
And pardon me, Mr. Chair, this is page 19 of your budget book.
Yep. All right.
The fund is paid for by agriculture. Pesticides, agricultural chemicals, both fertilizers and pesticides. There is a report that's issued each year, and that has been submitted for the summary. But the bottom line is that the reserve in the account, which is supposed to be maintained between 1 and 5 million, has been growing. The reason that it has been growing is that that particular program area, the staff that oversee those cleanups and respond to those emergencies, has been reduced. In 2004, we had 9.7 staff in that program area, and now we have 7.2. Not only have the staff been staff numbers have been reduced, but also some of the activities have been focused on some of our Superfund sites. I'm sure some of the members, and maybe perhaps all the members, are aware of the South Minneapolis Superfund site that we've been involved with. Now, while that has turned over to federal authority, that in fact took a lot of our time. We have four other Superfund sites that we're involved with. And while staff are paid from the Murla account, the $388,000, the bottom line is that our attention, our staff time, has not been. We haven't had the numbers, and we have had other activity areas as well. So what we're proposing very simply is, if the main reason for the fund to be growing is the fact that we don't have enough staff, and there's plenty of sites up there for us to deal with, we're proposing that we use some of this money to fund project management staff and hydrologists, the people who actually oversee the site cleanup, not just the folks that do administrative work. So we're proposing that this next year, in addition to the pesticide regulatory money, spending $485,000 in this program area, the fertilizer account paying $62,000, and the Superfund site paying $310,000, that we augment that with $271,000 in this proposal to bring in three staff members, bring our numbers back up, and address the existing sites that are out there.
So how many staff total are you going to be adding?
Mr. Chair, what we would be looking at is three full-time equivalents, but that will bring us back just a little bit above where we were just a few years ago. So we actually have two vacancies right now. We have two and a third vacancies in that program.
And so this staff will be 100% then dedicated to site cleanup?
Mr. Chair, that's correct. We would be looking at hiring two project managers and one hydrologist.
Okay. And into the unforeseeable future, or have you looked at your workload? I mean, are we going to level off? Is the ACRA activity... will they catch up, I guess, is what I'm saying, and see a decrease in our activity, or do you see none of that into the future? So this is a permanent, these people will be here working full-time on ACRA cleanup sites for the next 10, 20 years.
Mr. Chair,
when ACRA was first created, I think all of us thought that we could go out and clean up these spill sites and eventually, perhaps in 10 years, the need for this would go down. We have found that not to be the case, and I think the board, the public and private group, accept that. At the bottom of the fact sheet on the first page, there's actually a list of the work that we have in front of us. We are currently working on 30 long-term sites and 45 voluntary sites and 4 Superfund sites. But on the back burner, we did a project in which we encountered over 450 abandoned pesticide sites. We believe about 130 of those need additional work that we haven't been able to get to. And we have about 50 additional long-term sites that we're not working on right now. Bottom line is that we see a long-term effort needed to deal with this. When you say 10 or 20 years, perhaps by that time we'll be phasing down, because there has been significant improvement in the handling of pesticides. I want to make sure that we understand that. And then, as we have done, we will move people around between programs as that happens. People that we have working in our program areas now, while the numbers may be about the same, they certainly are working on different things than they used to.
Okay, just as supporting material, not now, but if you could provide us a list of all these sites that you're working on and that you need to work on, so we understand whose districts they're in and where they're at in the state, I think it would be just helpful to have as supporting what you're asking for.
Mr. Chair, we can do that.
Representative Fouts.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Very quick question. It says in the name Agriculture Chemical Response, all these sites are basically chemical and fertilizer sites and need to be cleaned up. There isn't other stuff mixed in there with them.
Mr. Brzezicki.
Mr. Chair, Representative Fouts, these are all A-chem sites, pesticides, and fertilizers. On some occasions, there is petroleum or other materials. When that happens, we work with the Pollution Control Agency to make sure that both issues are addressed appropriately, and we work in tandem. Most of these are pretty pure pesticide fertilizers.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to the testifiers, I'm curious if we have this backlog of so many Superfund sites, and you're not able to get them, and it's going to take 20 years or more to get to them, and we're adding 3 additional staff, but we don't have the funds to clean up the sites. How are 3 additional staff going to help us get to more sites without more dollars for the program?
Representative Mr. Brzezicki. Again, you can't afford the pay cut. I apologize.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate that. Mr. Chair and Representative Welty, we are currently working on 4 Superfund sites. Those sites are, while we have some administrative dollars, those sites, we work closely with the Pollution Control Agency to reserve Superfund money to clean those up in case it's needed. On Superfund sites, it's the responsible person that has to do the cleanup, largely. So we only have a few of those, but they tend to be the more complex and difficult sites to deal with. The A-chem cleanup sites, in which we have a constant load, we have a backload, and we anticipate there will be more coming, are paid for by the responsible party, and each incident the ACRA fund will reimburse 80% of $350,000. Most of the sites are cleaned up for that amount. The fund receives annual fees, surcharges they're called, to the tune of about $2.5 million a year. So the fund is constantly being replenished. That's the source of the cleanup dollars. We just don't have enough resources to fund the staff to do the giddy up to make sure that these sites are moving. It's the responsible person, the environmental company that or contractor that will do the cleanup under our oversight. So we just need to hire the project managers to make sure things proceed. The money has been there, and for a number of years, actually, it was kept in equilibrium. In other words, we were doing about $2.5 million worth of cleanup, and we'd receive about $2.5 million. This last year, We actually had an increase in the fund. About 2.9 million came into the fund, but the board only reimbursed 1.2 million. So what's happening is we don't have enough staff to get the project moving along, and the fund has been increasing. What we'd like to do is bring that back into an equilibrium. And Mr. Chair and Representative Welty, I think you were here a number of years ago. We actually were doing more cleanups than the fund was decreasing. Well, now with the lack of staff, it's gone too high. We had to actually do cost containment, I think, about 8 years ago to limit the exposure of the fund. So very simply, the most important component is the staff to oversee the number of cleanups, and we don't have the staff. The number of cleanups has decreased. The amount of applications to the fund has decreased, and that's why the fund is growing.
Okay, just one follow-up, just to clarify this. Over the last, you said, you know, in the past, you were using 2.5 million a year, and it was replenishing, and you were able to keep up. And all of a sudden, you had 2.9, and you weren't able to keep up. Have you had the same amount of staff? I just need a clarification. Have you had the same amount of staff working on this all the way through, or have you actually had the reduction in staff?
Mr. Chair, Representative Welty, the number of staff have changed over time. But in 2004, we had 9.7 full-time equivalents working in this program. Now we have 7.2.
Okay.
And Mr. Chair, excuse me, it's been 7.2 for about 2 or 3 years. So that is that's the issue that we're talking about.
Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Talking about these abandoned sites, could you generalize on these sites? Are they in buildings or locations undercover, or are they in the middle of a field or a road ditch where when you get to them in 10 years, the rain is going to have washed them away anyway?
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, very good question. A couple of years ago, we obtained a federal grant to do a survey because staff observed that a lot of the landscape was changing, and we wanted to document these. So we went out and GPS the sites. We did a review. We actually came up with about 450 sites. And we've done a review, and right now we think there's about 130 that actually need more work because they're of significance. And what we're talking about by a site would be typically an agricultural chemical facility that has been abandoned and has been sold, and perhaps the ground has been raised and they put a hardware store in there. That's actually what we'd like to prevent from happening until there's an environmental assessment done. And there are rules about that. A lot of these sites are basically sitting empty and abandoned right now. But I would say, and I could get back to you with more detail, I would say the majority of these sites are probably places where pesticide and fertilizer has been sold over a long period of time dating back to the 50s.
Okay,
Mr. Chair, that's the ACRA program and the fact sheet. The next fact sheet is the pesticide program funding proposal, and that in your book is actually found on page 22. The fact sheet provides a little bit of additional information and maybe of help in understanding what we're proposing. This is a little bit complicated, and perhaps the simplest thing to do would actually be talk about it in two components, because we're actually doing a couple of different things here. The first thing that I would I'd remind the committee is that the fees that were increased on pesticide registrants, which I talked about a little bit earlier, were first passed into statute during the Groundwater Protection Act, and the registration fees have not been increased since 1991. There have been some fee increases, adjustments up and down on licenses, and some modifications, but generally it's accurate to say that they've not been increased.
Now, when you talk about this is specific to non-agriculture pesticides, have we increased the agriculture pesticide fee since 91?
Mr. Chair, we have not increased pesticide registration fees since 1991 for anything. The first thing I'd like to do is actually ask you to turn to the back page. And this is what the chair just referred to. This is called the non-agricultural waste pesticide account. And on the back page, we provide a little bit of background and what our proposal is. Very simply, waste pesticides have been a big issue, and the legislature passed some significant modifications to the law last year. What we would like to do, and we recognize we're only implementing, this is only 6 months into the implementation of that, but what we are proposing is that we develop a fund that, much like ACRA, that the commissioner can move, can increase or decrease to maintain an account that would support the disposal of non-agricultural waste pesticides. So these are not the ag pesticides, this is everything else. The way we determine what an agricultural pesticide is versus a non-agricultural pesticide is by looking at the label. If it's an agricultural pesticide, it has an agricultural use box on it, usually in the second or third page. It's quite clear as to what constitutes agricultural chemicals. Everything else would be considered non-agricultural, and they would pay at initiation a 0.6% annual gross sales into this dedicated account that would only be used for waste pesticide disposal. Now, currently, as I mentioned earlier, the overall registration fee in the state is 0.4%. So this would be a very significant increase. That 0.6% then could be moved up or down depending upon the need of the fund. That's the way ACRA has worked, and it seems to have worked quite well. So that's one component of the fee increase. The department would not utilize that fund for anything. It would only be used for the reimbursement of that material that has been collected. And we're looking at that as the material that is collected largely by the county and the regional folks, the HHW. So that would provide a funding mechanism to pay for their work. On the front part of the page, there's some overall descriptions, but what I would just bring your attention to is on the registration fee aspect, is that 82% of the money that comes into this account, it comes from that registration component right now, which is a $250 minimum, but at 0.4%. For all of the products, agriculture and non-agriculture, we are proposing to raise that 0.4% to 0.6%. In addition to that, the non-agricultural pesticides, we're asking to raise the $250 minimum to $350. So that money, which I just described, would go to support our regulatory program, which we've talked about and we'll be talking about some more. On the second, on the back page, it does show a list of 9 different major program areas that fees would fund. We do see additional work, especially in a variety of areas. But one of the things that I point out is the legislative auditor in their report directed us to do a number of things like pesticide registration. I shouldn't say directed, they suggested and we agreed. And one of the things that we're looking at doing is more work in the urban areas. But certainly we are doing more work in the urban areas, and so that is something that we anticipate there will be a growing need for. So that is basically the pesticide fees proposal. In summary, in the dollars, we're looking at an increase of $2.7 million roughly, $870 going initially to this dedicated waste disposal program, and about $1.9 to go to our other regulatory programs, including funding some of the staff resources that we need to do the job and to do the ag waste pesticide collection and a variety of other things that are part of our responsibility.
So when I look at this list of 9 things that you're going to be utilizing some of that increase for, are these things you're already doing, or are they all additional?
things? Are you adding, for example, the water monitoring? I know you do water monitoring now. You have wells in sensitive areas of the state that monitor for various products. Are you increasing water monitoring? Are you adding it to the metro area? Are we just looking for a way to pay for what we're already doing that we're falling behind on?
Mr. Chair, we are doing water monitoring. We have increased in recent years, following the audit report, to do more surface water monitoring and some urban water monitoring as well. So we have been doing some of that. So we've actually increased. So in part, we'd be doing funding some of that, which we've already increased. However, one of the things that we have a need for is the laboratory support. We're looking at about $360,000 of this increase to be going to the laboratory. And what the laboratory has told us is that they need a staff person to maintain what they're doing, that they're spread very thin, and that they need additional equipment, which would increase our capability. So that, in that aspect, it might be more. And they also are telling us that they have equipment that do not have contracts to maintain that equipment. So if it goes down, they can't bring it back up. So about $360,000 would basically be to maintain where we are. But we have increased our program in recent years following the audit.
Well, it would be helpful, Mr. Ernst, again, you don't have it today, but if you could give us a breakdown of the 2.170, more than just the dollar amount, like we've started to, and I don't want to take the time to do it today, give me the spreadsheet on the budget change, how much is going to staff, supplies, travel, lab, et cetera, like we've seen in other areas, if you could do that just on the change item, so that we have an understanding of what we're adding or what we're doing or what's going on with that. I do have someone who wants to tell, at least one person, if there's others. We're going to take testimony right now on this particular piece while we're here. I have Eakin has a question, but then I'm going to have Mr. Hackman come up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just wondering how much of the fee increase, how much that will cover the costs of the total program here and all the responsibilities. Is it... would it be enough to cover the full cost or a certain percentage? Do you have that number?
Mr. Chair, Representative Eakin, the proposed fee increase should cover what we're looking at in the near future and our existing shortfall for the regulatory program. For the waste pesticide collection, we put this at 0.6%, and that will raise $870,000. That would be just for the non-ag waste pesticide collection. And at this point, we believe that should be more than adequate, and more than likely in years down the road, that could be lowered. But again, we're only 6 months into it, and we don't know what the total bill will be just as of yet.
And one of the things, correct me if I'm wrong, I mean, we are starting to track what's coming into these sites now, right, with the new laws we've passed, or via EPA number or product, so we understand if the non-ag product showing up or if it's an ag product, and over the next year or two we should get a better handle on where that is. And then at that point, are we have the ability to adjust those fees based on who's responsible for the waste.
Mr. Chair, that's correct. The agriculture component of this historically, when we managed the program, we kept a pretty good track on the ag products that were coming in. When the counties were running the program, they were not keeping track of the details. They are under the past statute. And we just got the first blush of information relatively recently. We're tabulating that from the first 6 months, but we don't have that as of yet.
Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Buzicki, on page 13, you have one of the goals and measures. You talk about running an additional 600 pesticide water samples. Would that be paid for through this fee increase?
Mr. Chair, that those 600, I believe, is are the turning here, but I believe that is under the clean water, the new constitutional amendment dollars. Those would be new. That's not, I haven't spoken about that. That would be new dollars, and those would be new samples. What I was talking about, the pesticide regulatory for the laboratory component, is simply to hold our own right now for about 1,300 samples that we deliver to the laboratory, whether they're misused or water samples.
And Representative Hamilton and members, there's $9 or $10 million requested from my Clean Water Fund. We'll spend a specific day on that, not necessarily within the divisions, but we'll look at that piece as a whole, because I know there's lots of questions on what that new money would be used for. So we'll dedicate some time specifically to that. Representative Anderson.
Just a quick clarification. Thanks, Mr. Chair. Maybe I missed something here, but with the fee increase, that'll total 0.6% when you're done with the increase. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, it would be 0.6% across the board, 250 for agricultural chemical products as the base, but 350 for non-agricultural, plus there would be a surcharge for the non-agricultural waste collection program of 0.6. So for the non-agricultural, it would be 1.2% with a 350 minimum.
Okay, thank you.
All right, Mr. Hackman, if anyone else wants to testify on anything you've heard today, we have one other person in the audience. Let the folks up front, our pages, know, and I'll get you the name. Welcome to the committee, and state your name and who you're with, and let us know what you think.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Andy Hackman, H-A-C-K-M-A-N, and I'm here on behalf of the Consumer Specialty Products Association. We represent primarily consumer pesticides, including antimicrobial products and disinfectants, which a lot of folks don't necessarily realize are actually registered as pesticides. Because disinfectants kill germs, they are registered as pesticides both at the federal level and here in Minnesota. We also represent things like insect repellents and products that are used inside your home. Generally, CSPA is supportive of regional registration fees that cover the registration programs and benefit all registering companies equally. We do have some significant concerns with the proposed registration fee increases, as you've heard about this morning. Specifically, moving from 250 to 350 would put Minnesota definitely at number three in terms of states and charging fees, and second for most of our companies based upon the sales factor that comes in there. So our companies are going to be facing a significant increase in fees for their products. We've got a number of companies that are Minnesota-based, including 3M, Ecolab, and MGK companies that are here in the area, and are members of ours and are very concerned about the increase. Because we are already budgeting for, our companies are already budgeting for the fiscal year that's going to be impacted by the proposed fees, this increase for some companies could be tens of thousands of dollars. They have to register every product, for example, every version of Mr. Clean, that's antimicrobial, has to be registered separately. So for a company that's registering 100 or several hundred products per year, this is going to be a significant cost. And on top of that, the non-agricultural waste pesticide collection program, and this is, in essence, a doubling of our fees, or 100% increase in the fees from as they currently are. We can discuss the importance of collecting home or residential pesticide products. We contend that our products should be recycled. Bottles of bleach and consumer use household pesticides are normally packaged in number two plastic that can be recycled in curbside collections. We believe that infrastructure should be utilized and should be improved in terms of ways to save costs here. Also, we are already paying for the agricultural collection program through our normal registration fees. If you look at item 9 on the activity sheet that was handed out this morning, the current registration fee already pays for agricultural waste pesticide collection and disposal. So the consumer side of the industry is paying both for the agricultural collections as well as under the new fee and the new proposed fund for collections of our products that we think can be recycled. So again, we have some strong concerns here. This is a substantial cost for our industry. We'd be welcome to discussing, you know, addressing new funding needs or additional funding needs in the state, but we're concerned about the dramatic increase that we're seeing in this proposal, and I'd like to discuss it with the committee. I appreciate the time this morning, and I can answer any questions that you may have. I think I included some bullet points in terms of our concerns with the committee when I dropped that off yesterday with the chairman, so hopefully you can utilize that.
Members have that in their packet. I forgot to mention that. There's a CSTA sheet that was in your packet, and that's what he's referencing right now.
Yep.
Questions, members? I mean, we appreciate you coming and testifying, and we certainly are open to listening and understanding. Again, I think you understand the situation we're in with the waste test side, but that's the part of this I'm most concerned about, is we have to make sure that fund is whole. But again, that's not the entire fee increase. A lot of it's going to these ancillary things that were listed. So I guess we're willing to entertain any ideas you have on how we should go about paying for those two different type of items, one the collection and the other the ancillary.
If I may, Chairman, in other states we have, where we've seen a need to increase to address fees, it's been done in a phased-in fashion. That's something we'd be willing to consider. I mean, this is a big hit for our industry, and in a quick turnaround. So that would be something we'd be willing to consider. Additionally, antimicrobial products already pay the minimum fee. So there might be some consideration around those products just paying the minimum fee, since we believe they can go into household recycling programs, and that's where efforts should be maintained. If it provides any input for the committee in terms of our perspective. So,
any other questions? All right. Thank you for coming. Wait a minute. Representative Szymanski had his hand up. I missed him.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Hackman, in the non-agricultural waste pesticides, are they treated as hazardous waste in every state across the country? Or?
Under RCRA, household hazardous waste is not classified as hazardous waste. In other states where our product could be collected, normally it's done through the agricultural program. This would be the first in the nation type of fee or type of fund for this collection activity. That's why we're also concerned, is it's the first in the nation type of collection for our product specifically.
Thank you.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Flackney. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself, who you represent, and provide any testimony you see fit.
Yeah, thank you, Chairman Junkie, members of the committee. My name is David Flackney. I work for Syngenta Crop Protection and serve in a number of different capacities in the state on advisory committees to the department and what have you. I wanted to just make a few quick comments with respect to the fee programs and the collection and payment of fees. As you heard a little bit earlier from the department, the program is set up to charge fees for registration and then collect surcharges to fund different programs and fund department operations. If you look at the process and how that has worked since its inception early in the 90s, when those fee surcharges were put in place, what has happened is it is a retail collected surcharge. So the folks that are at retail are charging the surcharge on their invoices. It works through the system, so the distributor charges a surcharge. It goes down to the dealer. It goes down to the producer. And that all gets rolled back up. The one thing that has changed over the years, and I think the department has recognized that there are some things going on out in the marketplace, because they have a proposal on the fertilizer collection side of the equation, where because of product coming in from out of state and changes in dynamics of the distribution channel, you have products coming in that may or may not be paying the surcharge. And so the proposal that the department has in another bill, 510, It talks about going to the point of final sale to make sure that that collection is happening for every pound that's going on the ground and being sold into Minnesota. The same issue is there for pesticides. In fact, I would add that it actually could be much worse. And the reason being is because pesticides are much easier to transport from long distances. We have situations where you have internet sales of products. You have brokers that are moving products within the state as well as from out of state into the state, and they're operating outside of the traditional distribution network. And so there becomes a fairness issue out in the countryside. You'll have cooperatives that are competing and selling product to their customers. They have all of the environmental controls that they've put, you know, they've spent a lot of money to put those in place. And, you know, they're charging the surcharge through the process. And then they're forced to compete with somebody from out of state that is not collecting the surcharge. And that puts them at a distinct disadvantage, and they've lost customers, and we hear about that when that process happens. So the thing that I wanted to just key up today is we want to have a conversation about not changing the amounts. I know the department has proposed slight changes in the surcharge percentages, but just the process of how that's collected. We believe that the same approach to do it at the point of final sale will ensure that it's a level playing field and you don't have some dealers at an economic disadvantage because they're not collecting the fees, and out-of-state people coming in and possibly avoiding the fees. So we want to just have that conversation. I wanted to tee it up with you this morning. I think there's one other component of it that's really critical. Some of these sales that come in from outside the traditional distribution system wind up showing up in, let's say, barns, dirt floors, being stored in areas that don't necessarily have the same controls that the traditional retail distribution system has, where there are containment and cement floors and various things to make sure that the product is stored in the right setting. So there's a number of benefits that can be maintained by fixing this process, and we want to really discourage things from operating outside of that system where we have those environmental controls, or at the very least make sure that 100% of the surcharges that are due to the department are paid, even from those folks who are selling into the state. So with that, I'll answer any questions. And
well, we'll certainly have more discussion on this. It was brought up, for those of you that weren't in Representative Trimba's committee, I had a bill that changes the way we're collecting fertilizer fees back to the consumer level, basically the end user. And that concept for pesticides was brought up that day or later on or the next day. And it's the first I've heard of it, but we're going to trust Mr. Flackney and Mr. Bond and others to be visiting with the department between now and the time we do our omnibus bill and days prior, obviously, because we will be focusing on that. It will be part of our bill on the fee collection aspect of it. And if there's something we can do, that's the time to do it.
Yeah, and Chairman Junkie, I appreciate that. And I wanted to say that with the process changing on the fertilizer side, if that bill is going to go forward in that function, in that way, now is the time to change it on the other side, because we will be out educating the distribution channel as to here are the forms, here's how it's collected, here's how it's sent in, and the surcharges are paid. And we would want to only have to do that once, not have to do that, you know, for the fertilizer and then have to go out and have a new system that you would create years later. So it really will help to be able to do that at one time.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Mr. Bond, are you still? Okay. And Mr. Tilley and Garlitz will certainly let you up, but realize we're going to spend another session or so on household hazardous waste collection as well as agriculture, because that whole program is going to get a review here beyond just the change item. So, Mr. Bond.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Bill Bond, representative of the Minnesota Crop Production Retailers, the ag dealers that you know throughout the state, and also we work with manufacturers and distributors. quick comment because I know time is short. We really think that the new non-ag pesticide fund that's being created makes sense. You'll recall last year when the counties came in and we had a task force that recommended an additional activity and programming. We had indicated at that time we really weren't, ag wasn't really asking for an additional service. So we would be well satisfied to go back to the program as it was operated before we got involved in the county funding and in particular the waste pesticide pickup program. So to us it makes sense to isolate that program and pay for it out of a dedicated fund. Related to the ACRA, we do have some concerns about taking a shifting money to pay for staff, additional staff out of the fund. We do realize the time that we're in this state, and we want to work with the department on that. We do not want to weaken that fund. It is an important fund for our industry and for our environment, and we know that in Minnesota, water is very important to us, and so cleanup is something we want to continue to support. The ag pesticide dealer license that the department's proposing also makes sense. It will level that playing field for those out-of-state organizations that may not currently report their sales and have a license in the state. And finally, regarding the proposal that Mr. Flackney suggested, I think it'd be wise to tell the industry to go work it out. I think the initial way that that program was set up when the industry got together, figured it out, and went to the department and told them how we wanted to operate it. And I think we ought to probably take the same approach as we look at this, and we certainly do want to work with you on that proposal as well. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. You got something to add, Mr. Kelly? You got a couple minutes here. We're going to have lots of time to talk about your county hazardous waste collection because we will have a day on that too.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Barry Tilley, and I represent the Solid Waste Management Coordinating Board, the Joint Powers Board of six of the seven metro counties that operate household hazardous waste programs, and Emily Garwitz will speak in a moment. I just wanted to step forward and say we want to commend the Department of Agriculture for their work in the area of ag pesticide collection. That's a very important process. The counties work closely with the Department of Ag bringing this forward. Mr. Bond just talked about the value of keeping the water we have in the state clean, and this plays a major role. And I wanted to say about the, I enjoy the, really appreciate the step that Department of Ag is taking, moving into a product stewardship model with pesticides. We are, as among counties, are concerned with the full life cycle cost of any product being paid for in the purchase price, and that way consumers make better choices. Right now in pesticides and a number of other products, the end of life costs of those products are not paid for by the purchase price, but rather fall back on government. Both state government and local government pay for. By moving towards the product stewardship model where you pay for the full life cycle costs up front, then consumers make better choices and our environment and our world is better. And Emily has some things to say about the individual program.
All right, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. My name is Emily Garwitz, and I'm with the Association of Minnesota Counties, and I also work with the Solid Waste Administrators Association. And we were also involved in the Waste Pesticide Task Force, and we were appreciative of the steps that were made by the legislature last session to try to get collection events held in all of the counties in the state, whether it be by contract with individual counties or Department of Ag coming out to counties to hold the collection events. So I also want to say thank you for that. We do still have concerns about the cost and the reimbursement for the programs, and we'll be talking with Mr. Chair and the Department of Ag and the rest of the members about those concerns. As Mr. Tilley noted, the product stewardship model is a very important model. There are several things that counties do participate in the recycling of, and we'll talk about that with the future HHW discussions. But I just wanted to just mention how important these dollars are for counties to be able to offer this service to residents when they come in with these waste pesticides and aren't sure what to do with them. So I appreciate the opportunity to talk to you, and you'll likely be hearing from me again on this issue.
Your concerns are noted, and we will have more discussion on this program, members. So this was just kind of a teaser for you of what's coming. So any other questions or any business for the committee? Seeing none, we are adjourned.